woman's wrists and pushed her away.
"Then listen carefully. I give you only one chance. My master has magic to protect your mind from the dreamwalker. You must swear an oath to him. You must be loyal to him."
Manda fell to her knees, clutching at Clarissa's dress.
"Yes, I swear."
"Then say these words, and you must mean them with all your heart." Clarissa spoke the devotion, pausing to let Manda repeat the words. When she finished, Verna and Clarissa helped the sobbing woman to her feet. Clarissa had always been so intimidated by Manda, always so afraid of her scorn. How many times had Clarissa crossed the street, her head bowed low as she tried to avoid Manda's attention?
"Hurry now," Walsh said. "Nathan told us to get out of here fast."
At the entrance, Walsh had to make up a story about His Excellency's plenipotentiary wanting some women. The guard eyed the nearly naked women, smiled knowingly, and slapped Walsh on the back. They all piled into the coach as Walsh climbed up into the driver's seat with Bulliston. As the coach lurched and then started out, Clarissa pushed Janet and Manda to the floor, in the center, so she could lift the leather-covered seat. She pulled out a long cloak. She only had one extra. They had expected to rescue Verna and Warren. Since Verna had a cloak, Clarissa gave the extra cloak to Manda and retrieved blankets for Janet and Amelia. All three women were immensely grateful to be able to cover themselves at last. Clarissa sat at the end of the seat, holding the strange black book Nathan had sent her for, with Amelia at the other end and Manda in the center, clutching at Clarissa for comfort. Manda kept weeping on Clarissa's shoulder and thanking her profusely. Clarissa put an arm around Manda and told her that she had expressed her gratitude enough times. It did feel good, though, to have the beautiful Manda Perlin looking up to Clarissa for a change rather than looking down on her. All because of Nathan. How he had changed her life, changed everything. They had to stop three times while soldiers checked the coach. Once, the soldiers made them all get out and line up for a look. The blankets and cloak had to remain in the coach as Janet, Amelia, and Manda climbed out for inspection. Walsh explained, in very crude terms, what he was doing with these slaves, how he was taking them for the pleasure of His Excellency's plenipotentiary. The soldiers were satisfied by Walsh's explanation and allowed them to continue on their way. They turned north at the harbor and headed up the coast road. Clarissa sighed in relief as she saw the last of the fires and tents finally fade into the distance behind them. It wasn't until they crested a hill, nearly an hour's ride out after leaving the last of the soldiers, that the flash lit the sky behind. Clarissa heard a cheer from up on the driver's seat. Walsh leaned down, gripping a rail with one arm, and stuck his face nearly upside down, partly into the window.
"Good job, Clarissa! You did it!"
Clarissa grinned. He swung back up, and he and Bulliston hooted into the night air. It was then that the sudden boom reached them, making Manda jump with fright. Verna, sitting in the center, opposite, produced a flame above her upturned palm and leaned toward Clarissa.
"Job, what is it that you have done?"
Clarissa patted the inky black book in her lap.
"Nathan sent me for this book, and he wanted the ones left behind destroyed. He said that they were dangerous, what with you and especially Warren telling Jagang the meaning of the prophecies in them. Nathan didn't want Jagang to be able to use the information." "I see," Verna said. "Lucky for us that we agreed to swear loyalty to Lord Rahl and go with you."
Clarissa nodded. "Nathan said I was to offer you the chance, but in either case I was to open that locket and leave it hidden there. He said that Jagang, having both Warren and the prophecies together, could ruin everything if you told Jagang anything important." Verna pressed her lips together as she let out a breath. She shared a look with Warren.
"I can't believe that after all this time I'm finally going to get to meet the prophet himself," Warren said. "Not long ago I had given up hope, and now I would be meeting Nathan."
Verna harrumphed.
"Out of the rain and into the lake. I can't believe I've sworn loyalty to that crazy old man."
Clarissa leaned forward.
"Nathan is dashing. He isn't old."
Verna barked a laugh.
"You have no idea, child. And he isn't crazy either. Nathan is the kindest, most wonderful, most generous man I've ever met."
Verna glanced down at Clarissa's cleavage and back up to her eyes. She had that look that Clarissa was used to seeing.
"Yes," Verna murmured.
I'm sure he is, my dear. You could have no better man to swear loyalty to, Clarissa said. Besides being thoughtful and kind, Nathan is a powerful wizard. I saw him turn another wizard to a pile of dust.
Verna's brow creased.
Another wizard? Clarissa nodded. Named Vincent. Vincent Nathan. They tried to hurt him. Nathan turned Vincent into a pile of ash.
Verna's eyebrows rose.
After that, Clarissa said, they were very polite to Nathan, and Jagang agreed to give the book. She tapped the book in her lap. To Nathan. Jagang said Nathan could have either the book or Sister Amelia. Now Nathan will have both. Nathan has great plans. Nathan will rule the world one day.
Verna and Warren shared a sidelong glance. She looked at Amelia.
What is this book, Amelia?
I stole it from the Temple of the Winds, Amelia said in a hoarse voice. I'm the only one who can use it. I started a plague. Thousands have already died because of what I did. It was how Jagang eliminated Richard Rawl.
Thank the Creator that we still have Nathan Rawl to protect us with the bond to him.
Dear Creator,
Verna whispered,
what have we agreed to with our oath to the likes of Nathan?
Chapter 63 Richard rose from the wizard's chair when he recognized the spirit gliding toward him. He couldn't call a specific spirit, and he didn't always know the ones who came, but he knew this one. With this one, he had a deep connection. The person this spirit once was, he had loathed, he had feared. Only once he understood her, and only after he had forgiven her for what she had done to him, was he able to gain his release. This one he had killed, and in so doing, he freed her from her torment. This spirit was the one who had later brought Colin and Richard together in that place between worlds.
Richard,
the spirit said as she seemed to smile. Denna?
I see you wear an Aegil. It is not mine.
Richard slowly shook his head. It is that of yet another Mord Sith who died because of me.
Reyna. I knew her in the world of life, and I know her here. Since she passed into the spirit world after the violation of the winds, she may not come to you here. She is not one of those chosen to rule on the prescripts as they pertain to you in the winds. Know that her spirit is at peace. You gave her peace in life, and so she asked me to come to you.
Richard rolled the red Aegil in his fingers. I gave your Aegil to Colin, as I promised you one time. Only she is able to give me more pain than you.
Only you, Richard, are able to give yourself more pain than I could give you.
Have it your way. I care not to argue. It is good to see you, Denna.
You may disagree after I am finished with you.
Richard smiled at her nature showing through even in her spirit form. You cannot harm me here, Denna.
You think not. I may not be able to harm your body, but I can still hurt you.
She nodded to herself.
Oh, yes, Richard, I can hurt you.
And how is that?
Denna lifted an arm.
I can make you remember. Remember and make it real again. You and I have a past.
Richard spread his hands. And to what purpose? Denna spread her luminous arms.
That is for you to decide, Richard.
With a flash of light in his mind, the Temple of the Winds was gone, fading from his consciousness, and he was in a place he remembered, the castle in Tamarang. He was there again. He could taste the terror. Denna had captured him. She had tortured him for days. He was delirious and weak. Every step was painful as he followed Denna through the grand dining hall. His wrists were cut and swollen from the manacles she used to shackle him up to a beam. When Denna stopped and spoke to people, Richard kept his eyes to her braid as he silently waited behind her. Denna controlled his life, his destiny. He was allowed only that which she granted. He hadn't eaten since she had captured him. He longed to eat something, anything. All around, the jumble of talking and laughter from the queen's guests droned in his head. Denna, too, was a guest of the queen. Richard, at the end of a chain running from his mistress to a collar around his neck, was Denna's prisoner. She hadn't let him eat during those days of torture, and he needed food. As she sat at the dining table, Denna snapped her fingers, pointing at the floor behind her chair. Richard sank to the floor, relieved to be allowed that small comfort. He could rest. He wasn't hanging from the shackles. He wasn't being made to stand all night. He wasn't being tortured. All of the guests were eating. The varied aromas tormented him. He ached with hunger. Everyone else was eating, but he had to sit on the floor behind Denna, watching what others enjoyed, what he was denied. Richard thought about the times he had been with Colin, at camp, eating rabbit cooked over the fire or porridge sweetened with berries. He licked his lips, thinking about the succulent, hot, tender meat, brown and crunchy on the outside from the fire. He had so enjoyed those meals with her. The food and the company were the best. Now he was denied that life and was yoked to another. After everyone else had been eating for a while, a server brought a bowl of gruel. Denna had him hand it down to Richard. He held it in trembling hands. Almost any time before, he would have cast it aside in disgust, but now it was all he had. He was made to put it on the floor and to eat it like a dog, while laughter from the guests filled his ears. He didn't care. He was being allowed to eat at last. Gruel was all he was allowed, but at that moment, in his state of tormented need, it was wonderful. It was freedom from the ache of hunger, freedom from the misery of seeing others eat while he starved, fulfillment of a simple but long-denied need. He slurped at it, relishing it, gulping it down. He could not escape his imprisonment in his new life, over which he had no say, and so he decided that if gruel was all he would be allowed, then he would have to accept that fact and sate his hunger with what he was given. The light flashed in his head. Color bled from his sight, vanishing almost painfully, and he saw again the muted mists of the Temple of the Winds around him. Richard was on his hands and knees on the floor, panting in terror. The glowing white spirit of Denna towered over him. Denna was right. She could hurt him still. This pain, though, she had given him out of love. Richard staggered to his feet. How could he have thought he was ignorant before, and that the knowledge of the Temple of the Winds had brought him new sight? He had had sight all along, but had failed to see. Knowledge without heart was empty. Wizard Ricker had left, with the Sliff, a message for him, but he had ignored it. Ward left in, ward right out. Guard your heart from stone. He had failed to guard his heart from stone, and it had almost cost him everything. Thank you, Denna, for that gift of pain.
It has taught you something, Richard.
That I have to go home, back to my world.
Thank you, Richard, for living up to what I expect of you.
Richard smiled. Were you not a spirit, I'd kiss you. Denna smiled a sad smile.
The thought is the gift, Richard.
Richard shared a gaze with her for a moment, a gaze between worlds. Denna, please tell Raina that we all love her.
Raina knows this. Feelings of the heart cross the boundary.
Richard nodded. Then you know how much we love you, too.
That is why I came to vouch for you in your quest to the winds.
Richard held his arm out. Would you escort me to the passageway? I would find peace in your company before I leave this empty place. The worst is yet ahead of me. Denna glided along at his side as he headed for the passageway out, striding the Hall of the Winds for the last time. They didn't speak. Words were too paltry to touch what was in his heart. Near the great doors, the spirit of Darken Rawl waited.
Going somewhere, my son?
The sound of his words echoed painfully through the hall. Richard glared at the spirit of his father.
Back to my world. There is nothing for you there. Carlin, your true love is married to another man. She has sworn an oath to him before the spirits.
You could never understand why I'm going back.
Carlin is married to my son Drefham. You cannot have her now.
That is not why I'm going back.
Then why leave this place? The world of life will be empty for you now.
Richard stalked past the spirit of his father. He didn't have to explain his reasons to the one who had caused so much grief. Denna glided along beside Richard. At the doors, Darkin Rawl appeared again, blocking the way.
You may not leave.
You can't stop me.
Oh, yes, my son, I can.
You must let him pass, Denna said.
Only if he agrees to the terms.
Richard turned to Denna. What's he talking about?
The spirits set the requirements for your path into our world. Because it was your unique path here, Darkin Rawl was called upon and given commensurate sway over your price for coming here, your sacrifice to come here. Darkin Rawl set the more onerous of the sacrifices, such as Drefham marrying Carlin. If one who participated in your coming so chooses, this spirit also has the right to set requirements if you are to leave.
I will simply banish him, Richard said. I know how to do that now. I can banish him from the winds and then leave.
It is not that simple,
Denna said.
You traveled from the world of life through the underworld to this place, within the world of souls. You must return through the underworld. The spirits can set a price. It must, however, be one that is fair in view of the forces and worlds involved, and it must be a price within your ability to satisfy.
Richard ran his fingers back through his hair. And I must pay?
If he names a price within the edicts, then you must. If you are to return to your world.
Smiling that vile smile of his, Darkin Rawl glided closer.
I only have two small, insignificant requirements. Meet them, and you may return to your brother, Drefham, and his wife.
Richard glared.
Name them. But if you set the price too high and I choose not to pay it and remain here instead, then I swear I will devote my eternity to making your soul twist in torment. And you know I can do it. The winds have taught me how.
Then I guess you will have to decide just how important this is to you, my son. I think you will pay it.
Richard didn't want to tell him how important it was, or the price would climb.
Name the price, and I will decide if I will pay it. I was willing to stay here, I may yet decide to do so.
Darkin Rawl came closer, close enough that the pain of his spirit coruscation was almost enough to make Richard back away. He willed himself to hold his ground without a shield of magic.
Oh, the price is going to be high, indeed, but I think you will pay it. I know you, Richard. I know your foolish heart. Even this price you will pay for her.
Darkin Rawl did indeed know Richard's heart. Darkin Rawl, after all, was the one who had almost destroyed it.
Name the price or be gone.
First, the knowledge of the Temple of the Winds was not yours before you came to this place. You will return as you came, without the knowledge you acquired here. Back in your world, you will be as you were before you left it.
Richard had expected as much.
Agreed. Oh, very good, my son. How eager, how earnest you are. Will you agree to the second requirement so readily?
His smile seemed as if it would strip flesh from bone.
I wonder.
His voice went on in a lethal hiss. When Darkenrall named the second requirement, Richard's knees nearly buckled.
Can he do that?
Richard could manage no more than a whisper.
Can he demand that?
Denna stared back with somber, spirit eyes.
Yes.
Richard turned away from the two spirits. Head bent, he pressed his hand over his eyes.
It is that important to me,
he whispered. I agree to the price.
I knew you would.
Darkenrall's malevolent laugh echoed the length of the Temple of the Winds.
I knew that even this you would pay for.
Richard gathered his senses. He slowly turned, lifting his hand toward the evil spirit.
And with this price you have shown me your barren spirit.
In that, dear father, you have made a mistake, for I can now use that emptiness against you. The laughter died out.
You have agreed to the price I have set within my right and power. You can do nothing but banish me from the winds, and that will not negate the price. The world of souls will enforce it, now that it is named and accepted.
So they will, Richard said. But you will taste my revenge for all you have done, including the price you have demanded, when you could have stopped with the first as fair. Richard freed a pristine flow of subtractive magic, uncontaminated by so much as a scintilla of the additive. It was the force of the void unleashed. Total oblivion of light engulfed the spirit of Darkenrall. A wail came from that deep forever as Darkenrall was plunged into the unmitigated shadow of the Keeper of the Underworld, where not the slightest trace of light from the Creator shone. It was the pain of denial of that light that was the true torture of the Keeper's dark eternity. When he was gone, Richard turned once more to the passageway back to the world of life.
I am sorry, Richard,
came Denna's tender voice.
None but he would have demanded this of you.
I know, Richard whispered as he called the lightning to take him back.
Dear spirit,
I know. Chapter 64. Drefn hooked his hand under her arm and pulled her shoulder against him. At the white ruffles of his shirt hung two red aegil.
Isn't it about time you ended this pretense, my wife? Isn't it about time you gave in to your desires and admitted your hunger for me?
Colin glared into his blue, Darkenrall eyes.
Are you really mad, Drefn, or do you just pretend it? I agreed to wed you to save lives, not because I wanted it. When will you ever admit it to yourself? I do not love you, nor will I ever.
Love? When have I ever mentioned love? I speak of passion.
You are delusional. If you think I will ever...
You already have. You want it again.
It cut her to the heart that he had so easily deduced what had happened with Richard. He pointed it out constantly. He taunted her for it. It was her eternal punishment for what she had done, a stain she couldn't annul. Distant thunder rumbled through the mountains as the spring storm that had come so suddenly moved on, away from the city. The wild lightning had reminded Colin of Richard. She had stood at the window, watching the violent flashes, remembering.
Never.
You are my wife?
You have sworn an oath.
Yes, Drefn, I have sworn an oath, and I am your wife. I will live by my words, but the spirits are satisfied with what I have given. They demand no more, or the plague would not be gone.
She pulled her arm away.
If you want me, then you will have to rape me, for that is what it will be. I will not go to your bed willingly, nor easily.
His smile was maddening.
I can wait until you finally give in to your lust. I want you to enjoy it.
I long for you finally to admit it, to ask for it.
He stalked away, but turned back when she called his name.
What are you doing with Kara and Berdine's Aegil?
Touching an Aegil was painful only if it was one that had been used against you in the past, if you had been the prisoner of a Mord Sith. Aegil were weapons only in the hands of the Mord Sith to whom they belonged, but without the bond to a true Lord Rawl, they no longer functioned. For Drefn, they were nothing more than obscene decoration. He lifted the red rods away from his chest to have a look at them.
Well, I thought that since I am the Lord Rawl now, I should wear these as a symbol of my authority. After all, Richard wore one. You wear one.
The Aegil we wear are not symbols of authority. They are symbols of our respect for the women to whom they belonged.
He shrugged as he let them drop back down.
The army seems quite intimidated to see me wearing them.
That will do.
Good night, my dear. Sleep well.
His sly smile returned.
Call out if you have need of anything.
Muttering a curse under her breath, Colin shouldered open the door to her rooms. She was exhausted and wanted only to fall into bed, but she knew that her racing mind would deny her sleep. Berdine was waiting for her.
Is he gone to bed?
She asked, referring to Drefn.
Yes, Colin said, as I am about to do.
No, you can't. You have to come with me.
Colin frowned at the serious look on Berdine's face.
Where do you want me to go?
We have to go up to the keep.
What's wrong? Is it the Slif? Has someone tried to come through the Slif?
Berdine waved dismissively as she stepped closer.
No, it's not the Slif.
Then what is it?
I just want you to come up there with me, that's all. I want some company.
Colin stroked her hand down the woman's shoulder.
Berdine, I know how lonely you are, but it's late. I have a headache and I'm tired. All afternoon and evening I've been in meetings with Drefn, General Curson, and a number of officers. Drefn wants to move the troops back to Dahara, for us all to go to Dahara. He wants to abandon the Midlands to the Order and concentrate on defending Dahara. I've been arguing myself blue. I need to go to bed and get some rest so I can get up in the morning and try again to convince them of the folly of Drefn's plan. The General isn't so sure that Drefn isn't right. I am.
Sleep later. You are coming up to the keep with me.
Colin gazed into the Mord Sith's eyes, and that was what they were, Mord Sith eyes. This was not Berdine speaking, it was Mistress Berdine, as cold and demanding as any Mord Sith came.
Not until you tell me why,
Colin said in a level tone. Berdine seized Colin's arm.
You are going up to the keep with me. You can either go sitting in the saddle or lying over it, your choice, but you are going, and you are going now.
Colin had never seen such a look of determination in Berdine's eyes. It was frightening. That was the only word for it. Frightening.
All right. If it's that important to you, let's go. I just want to know why.
Instead of answering, Berdine tightened her grip on Colin's arm and forced her to the door. Berdine cracked the door, checking, then opened it enough to stick her head out for a look.
It's clear, she whispered. Come on. Berdine, you're scaring me. What's going on?
Without answering, Berdine shoved her through the door. They took the service stairs and avoided the passageways that were heavily patrolled. Berdine must have spoken with the guards they did encounter, because when the two of them approached, the guards turned the other way, looking off as if they had seen no one. Two horses waited, both army horses, big bay geldings. Berdine tossed a soldier's cloak at Colin.
Here, put this on to cover that white dress of yours so people won't recognize you or Drefn will hear about it.
Why don't you want Drefn to know where we're going?
Berdine seized Colin's ankle and stuffed her foot into the stirrup. The stirrup was big and loose, made for a man's boot. Berdine smacked Colin's bottom.
Get it up there!
Colin abandoned her resistance. Berdine obviously wasn't going to tell her what the urgency was about. The ride to the Wizard's Keep was silent, as was the march through the empty halls, passageway, and rooms. Before they turned down the last stone corridor to the slip, they encountered Kara standing guard outside a door. Kara, like Berdine, was unreadable in her stern demeanor as she watched Berdine and Colin hurry toward her. At the door, Berdine seized the lever with one hand and Colin's arm with the other. The look in Berdine's eye was unequivocal sobriety.
"Don't you dare disappoint me, Mother Confessor, or you will find out exactly why Mord Sith are so feared.
Kara and I will be with the Slif." Without looking back, Kara started out toward the Slif, while Berdine, without further word, opened the door and roughly shoved Colin into the room. Colin stumbled, catching her balance as she glanced back to see Berdine pull shut the door. Colin turned and found herself looking into Richard's eyes. Her heart seemed to stop along with her breathing. A half dozen candles in an iron stand reflected little points of light in his gray eyes. He seemed bigger than life. Every detail was as she remembered. Only his sword was missing from that of her mental image of him. Ambivalence kept her breath locked in her lungs. Finally, she found words.
"The plague is ended."
"I know."
The room felt so small, the stone so dark, the air so heavy. She labored to breathe, to slow her suddenly racing heart. His forehead was beaded with sweat, even though it was cool in the depths of the keep. A drop rolled down over his cheekbone, leaving a wet trail.
"Then what are you doing here?
There can be no point to it. I have a husband. We have nothing to say to each other. Not after... not here, like this, alone."
His gaze left hers at hearing the cool tone of her voice. She had hoped it would force him to say it.
"Dear spirits, let him say he forgives me."
He said instead,
"I asked Kara and Berdine to bring you here so I could talk to you. I came back because I must speak with you. Will you grant me that much?"
Colin didn't know what to do with her hands.
"Of course, Richard."
He nodded his thanks. He looked in pain. He looked in anguish. His eyes had the dull gloss of distress. She wanted nothing so much as for him to say that he forgave her. Only that would mend her broken heart. Those were the only words that would mean anything to her. She just wanted him to say it. But he stood there, while his gaze focused beyond the cold stone of the walls. She decided that if he was going to say it, to forgive her, then the only way was to force him into it.
"So, have you come to forgive me, Richard?"
His words came softly, but with great resolve.
"No, I did not come to forgive you. I can't forgive you, Colin."
She turned away. She finally found something to do with her hands. She pressed her fists against her stomach.
"I see." "Colin," he said from behind her, "I can't forgive you because it would be wrong of me to come here to forgive you.
Would you have me forgive your humanity? Shall I forgive you slaking your thirst? Shall I forgive your eating when you hunger? Shall I forgive you for the feel of warm sunlight on your face?"
Colin wiped at her cheeks and then turned to him.
"What are you talking about?"
The stem of a rose was stuck behind his belt. Richard lifted the rose and held it out to her.
"Your mother gave this to me."
"My mother?"
Richard nodded. "She asked if I found enjoyment in it, and when I told her that I did, she asked if I would then return to you. It took a long time for me to understand what she meant."
"And what did she mean?"
"What she meant is that we have the capacity to enjoy such things. Is it wrong for you to find pleasure at the sight of a rose, in its fragrance, if I am not the one who gave it to you?
How can I forgive you that?" "Richard, this is far different from finding pleasure in the fragrance of a rose."
He sank to one knee. He put a fist to his abdomen.
Colin, I was once connected to a woman by my flesh, as you were connected to your mother. That is the only connection of flesh we have in this life. His fist moved to his chest. It is here that we connect ever after that. We can be connected only in our hearts. You did not give him your heart. That was mine, and mine alone. The winds, the spirits took their price from you. They left you with little, and you chose to take what was left and to live. You chose to be human. You chose to live life as best you could with what you had left of yourself. You fought for life. You simply took pleasure to which you were entitled. I do not own you. You are not my slave. There is nothing for me to forgive. You did not betray me in your heart. It would be presumption of the worst order if I came with an offer of forgiveness when you never betrayed me with your heart.
Colin could feel herself trembling as she drew a breath.
You hurt me, Richard. I thought my heart was safe with you always, no matter what. And you walked away from me. You promised it was. You wouldn't even let me try to explain.
I know, he whispered. His other knee touched the floor as he bent at her feet, his head bowed. That is why I have returned. I have come to beg your forgiveness. I am the one who was wrong. I am the one who caused the true pain. I am the one who betrayed our hearts, not you. It is the worst sin I could commit, and I alone am guilty of it. I am without defense. There can be no excuse. I'm so sorry for what I've done to you, Colin. I cannot undo the wrong I have done. I have wounded your heart, and for that I throw myself before you and beg your forgiveness. I do not deserve it, and so cannot ask it. I can only beg it.
The way he knelt at her feet, she towered over him. Will you forgive me, Richard?
There is no room in my heart to hold anything for you but love, even though we cannot be together. Though I am free of my oath, you are sworn to another, and I must respect that. But I cannot help that I can love no other but you. If your heart wishes it, then I forgive you.
Please, Colin, all I can have in this life, if you will grant it, is your forgiveness.
Mere moments before, she had had doubts, been uncertain as to her true feelings about him. Now, absolute conviction avalanched through her. Colin sank down to the floor before him. She put her hands to his shoulders and urged him to look up at her.
I forgive you, Richard. With all my heart, I love you, and I forgive you.
He smiled a sad smile.
Thank you.
She could feel the miracle of her heart mending, of joy flooding into the emptiness like life itself returning.
At the ceremony, when I was being married to Drefin, I said the words aloud that they demanded, but in my mind, in my heart, I was saying the oath of marriage to you.
Richard wiped a tear from her chin.
I did the same.
She squeezed his arms.
Richard, what are we going to do now?
There is nothing to do now. You are sworn to Drefin.
She touched her fingers to his face.
But what about you? What about you and me?
His smile left. He shook his head.
It doesn't matter. I have what I needed, what I came for. You have returned my heart.
But how can we go on like this? Not only that, but we have to do something, and fast. Drefin wants to withdraw the troops back to Dahara and make a stand against the order there.
Anger flashed in Richard's eyes.
No! You can't let him do that, Colin. If you let Jagang divide the new world, he will take it one piece at a time, with Dahara the last to fall. You can't let Drefin do that. Promise me you won't.
I don't need to promise. You are Lord Rawl. You can stop it now. I am the Mother Confessor. We'll do it together.
You must do it, Colin. I can't help you.
But Why not? You've returned. Everything will work out. We'll think of something. Find a way. You are the seeker. You always find a way.
I'm dying. Ice flashed through her.
What? What? Do you mean you're dying? Richard, you can't die. Not now. Not after... No! Richard, no! It's all right now. You're back. Everything is going to be all right.
She saw it then, the pain in his eyes, and realized, when he slumped to a hip, that he was unable to stand.
In order for me to return, the spirits demanded a price.
He coughed, wincing in pain. She clutched at him.
What are you talking about? What price?
When I was there, at the Temple of the Winds, I gained all the knowledge there. I understood my power. I could use it. I used it to stop the plague. I somehow interrupted the flow of power from the winds that made the Book of Magic work in this world.
You mean that you no longer know how to do it? You mean the plague will come back?
He lifted a hand to allay her fear.
No, the plague will not return. But as the price of returning to this world, I was not allowed to keep the knowledge of the winds. I had to come back as I was before.
But you mean that you are simply mortal, like before?
No. They demanded more. They demanded that if I was to return, I had to take the magic of the stolen book into myself to keep it from the rest of the world of life.
What?
Colin breathed, wide-eyed.
You don't mean...
I have the plague.
This is the end of this cassette.